Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
This is Sherry Bayer from All in the Industry. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, and welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm your host, Linda Palacio, on this half-hour journey through culinary history. And, you know, a lot of things have changed in Italy. The food, not the culture, obviously, but there's, you know, it's modern like everything else is modern. One thing, however, that hasn't changed is the food of the feasts and the feast days. And joining me today to talk about these feast days, or at least as many as we can pack in our short time, is Judy Francini. And Judy Witz Francini is an Italian-based food writer and culinary tour guide and a cook and a cooking teacher. She has been living in Tuscany for 30 years. And in 1988, she began teaching cooking and started Divina Cucina, her cooking classes and cooking school, to share her secrets of Tuscan cooking, or the secrets of Tuscan cooking. And more than that, Judy shares her knowledge of the history and the culture, and it just gets rave reviews from anyone who goes over to Tuscany to learn and cook with Judy. And she has a new book out called Divina Cucina's Recipes, Secrets from My Tuscan Kitchen, and she has a travel app called Chianti, Food and Wine. Judy, I'm so happy that you can join me in the studio today.
Thank you, Linda. I'm so happy to be here. This is great.
Well, you've been traveling all around the U.S. on this short vacation that you have. It's sort of a busman's holiday. You've been working the whole time you've been here, but I hope that you've been having fun, too.
Well, it's really not work. I know it's funny because people, when they look at you on Facebook and Instagram, they see all these pictures. And when you're in food, it's not always work. But I try to share the experience of where I am and what I'm doing, so...
Great. Well, tell me, you just recently got back from Sicily, correct?
Yes.
And you got to experience the San Giuseppe Festival firsthand.
It's really great. Well, number one, I'm not Italian. I'm not Italian-American. My family is like French, Russian, all sorts of things. But I ended up in Italy, and I've just embraced these festivals because, as you know, the celebrations with food around festivals is incredible. And San Giuseppe is St. Joseph's Day, which in Italy is Father's Day, which is one of the most important holidays that there is. And especially in Sicily, they do these altars to San Giuseppe with decorations made of bread and food, cooked items to feed like the poor of the village. And I base myself out of Memphi, which is at the Planeta Winery. It's got a lovely little estate, a tiny little village. And I found that in this region... It was where there was Gibellina and Salemi and Poggio Reale, where there was the earthquake in 1966.
Ah, yeah.
And so many of those people moved to America, and a lot of the people, that's considered like a Palermo region, fishing villages, went to New Orleans, went to Kansas City, and brought their traditions with them there. And in New York, you also do the St. Joseph tables, very, very big. And it's more of a Sicilian thing, not the Napoletani. And the tables we were at were just amazing. The passion and the love the woman put into these decorations.
Amazing. And when you mentioned you based yourself in the small village of Menfi, it's interesting, the festivals and the saints' days, the feast days, they're always so much more colorful, and they celebrate more, I think, traditionally and vividly in a lot of the small towns.
Deeper, I think. Yeah. It's deeper ingrained into them, and it's an event because you don't just like bake today for tomorrow. These women are doing these intricate decorations. And I don't know where your family's from, but the...
I'm not Italian.
Okay, good. the original Fig Newton came from Sicily. It's a Bucciolati or Cucitedi is a lard.
Cucitedi, I've heard a lot of, yeah. Christmas time, especially.
Yeah, it's a lard-based cookie dough with cooked figs with candied orange rind. My assistant, Erica, her mother is Sicilian, and we've made them last year together. And then with razor blades, they actually cut through and make designs in these cookies. So you get very decorative. Here, I've seen they're just like usually a glaze and sprinkles.
Yeah.
But you could do a razor blade and do designs with them. So that's a base for Christmas cookies with this fig paste. And for this St. Joseph's Day, they do a bottom layer, put the fig spread in, put another layer on top, and then do that cut-out lacework with the dough.
Wow.
So you've got giant hearts, you've got a peacock symbol, and it's breathtaking. Huh. And then they hang them huge pieces as decorations.
There are a lot of sweets that are associated with St. Joseph's Day, aside from the bread, the fancy breads,
sfinche,
right?
We're in Sicily called sfinche. Zeppoli in Naples, I believe. Usually they're fried. Everything's fried for holiday. And then you have the ricotta-based ones, the cream-based ones. Where I was, it's more of a cream puff, but a dough ball that's just with sugar, not filled, instead of the pâte à choux, the cream puff dough piped out into a ring or baked or deep fried.
Okay, we went right to dessert.
Sorry, I was a pastry chef.
Oh, right. I was going to get into your background, you know, later in the show, but we can mention that now that you've brought it up, that you started out your career as a pastry chef in San Francisco before you moved to to Italy.
I found I traveled a lot since I got out of high school, and I always found myself, if I needed to do something, make money while I was working, you could always wash dishes, wait tables, something with food, peel eggplant. I think I've done everything. And so when I decided I wanted a job that would allow me to travel, I thought about working in a hotel, like front house. And then I thought, you have to deal with clients. That was just too much. And so I went into the kitchen. And back when I started in the late 70s, it was a male-based kind of French kitchen, all that yelling and screaming. And I didn't like that. But if you were in the pastry department, people needed you. And that was a job where you could work your way up. So I was very
not unlike
lucky.
Today, really. I mean, it's still pretty much that way today.
Yeah. So it was a good start, and then I came to Europe for my last hurrah in 1984. About a one way ticket. I had $2,000 on a one way ticket, and I did a month in France and a month in Italy because I had never been to Italy. So I took a month of Italian. But in France, I went to Paris. I could have worked at La Varenne. I talked the Paul Bocuse. I was friends with from the hotel. And in Nice, Roger Verger, I'd already done his cooking school in Le Moulin de Mouchon. He was opening a new school in Nice. I studied French for 14 years. And I knew that's where I was going to go, that I wouldn't like Italy or wouldn't like Italians because they're always yelling and screaming. And I came to Florence and I studied Italian for a month and I ran out of money and I just couldn't leave.
Not because you ran out of money.
I loved it. I loved it. And so I stayed illegally, for like 3 years. But I got a job and...
And then you fell in love with your husband. And
he's fun.
The rest is history. Yeah. Right?
But most people think I stayed because of a man. But I stayed because I fell in love with a city. It was very similar to San Francisco, where I'm from. Very art-based and culture-based in the Renaissance. And then I met a guy, so it makes it easier. But
I remember reading you have a background in art history before you decided to go into food, right? So,
but what are you going to do with that?
Yeah, well, exactly. I know about that one. Right. Well, that of course answers the question of what have you been doing in Italy for 30 years and why are you in Italy? So that pretty much answers that. Mm-hmm. And through all that time, you've gotten to know a lot of the culture and the tradition and the background. And I decided, well, to give this the historical twist that I like to do with my shows, I thought the feast day, since you had just, we had talked about this before the show, that you had just, observed the San Giuseppe. What about some of the other feast days? There are some interesting ones.
Because some of them are religious-based, which are the base of everything. I have several favorites, personal favorites. Sant'Antonio, which is not St. Anthony of the Lost Things, but St. Anthony the Abbot, is January 17th, I believe. And he's always, from my Catholic school days, I love holy cards and all that. He's pictured with a stick in his hand, standing with a cow and a pig at his feet. And he's the patron saint of farm animals. And on his patron saint's day, which is in the middle of winter, is when you kill your family pig to make the prosciutto. And this is from days of no refrigeration. So you would kill the pig, salt the pig, hang it up, and by the time the weather started to change, you would then get the heat that would actually dry it more. And it was all done in the home. I remember I haven't been in Italy that long. I remember like 10 years ago going to my neighbor in the countryside, and I saw he had a pig. So I stopped to ask him, when are you going to kill your pig? And can I see your salamis and prosciuttos? And he took me up to the guest room, which was the pig aging room. And it was like the guest room in their house. That
was upstairs. Right?
It was upstairs in the house facing south, windows open, and on your wardrobe hanging IKEA kind of Armada thing, rack, he's got prosciuttos hanging. And, you know, a pig has two rear ends and two front ends. So the rear ends are the prosciuttos and the front ends are the spalla, the shoulders. And they're hanging up there. That's what we did. One pig. That fed his family for the year.
What I love is that they would have killed the pig in January anyway, because that's when you know, it's cold. You slaughter, during the cold weather. Right. The fact that then it's associated with a patron saint.
But also I found there's recipes, the old recipes where people didn't read or write. You would beat a recipe for like three Hail Marys.
Huh. Interesting.
So if the calendar has always been a sign of when to do things.
Right.
But
even in pagan times. I mean pre-Christian era. And that it was according to the seasons, right?
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that happened that's come out of that also is obviously all your pigs aren't going to make it. If you have to kill a pig in the summer, you can't make prosciutto.
It's too hot.
The way they do it, it's too hot. They have another technique. I worked with Dario Cecchini, the crazy butcher in Panzano. Mm-hmm. He has tonno di Chianti, the tuna of Chianti, not being anywhere near the water. This old recipe was from a man of Gaiole in Chianti. And the recipe had disappeared, and Dario asked the son of the butcher for it because he wasn't making it anymore. And you would salt your ham, fresh ham, that you would get in the summer, draw the liquids out of it like you would for a prosciutto, but then it would be boiled in wine and packed in olive oil.
Oh, interesting.
And it tastes like tuna.
Huh.
And he serves tuna and beans, but it's pork.
Wow.
It's really beautiful. And in Liguria, they do the same thing with rabbits. And it's tuna. Rabbit tuna.
Yeah.
Because fishermen don't eat fish.
Interesting.
They eat rabbits.
Okay, bunnies.
Happy Easter.
Yeah, right. So St. Anthony's Day, that's January, and that's pork. That's slaughtering the pork.
Mm-hmm. Then March we have St. Joseph's.
No, of course. Yes.
Then we have Easter and Easter Monday. That's fine. That's a no-brainer. Everybody does that. And then we start getting in the summer,
but special foods. I mean, there are special, and again, it's all according
seasonal.
To the season. It's all seasonal.
I was just in Sicily, and it was perfect time, artichoke season, and they had the artichoke festivals. And we were lucky enough to find artichokes being charcoal cooked outside the market in Catania. The guy just took a here it would be like a one of those gas can thing, tin container.
Oil drums. Yeah.
He put it together with coals, real coal, and then put these giant artichokes in there and opened them up and put parsley and garlic, and in a giant water bottle had mixed olive oil and water with salt and cut a hole in the plastic top, and he would just squeeze that in from the top into the center of the artichoke, and then he covered it with, butcher's paper.
Hmm.
And so the heat was coming from the bottom.
Steam
they were steaming,
the top,
and he was holding the steam in, and then he took that off, added more water, kept cooking, and then he took the artichokes off, pulled off the little few burnt leaves on the outside, and we had these beautiful steamed artichokes just pulling off the leaves right there at the market.
Wonderful.
It was, and there are villages then that celebrate that, and I've seen that on Andrew Zimmerman's show and stuff, that the artichoke festival, and they have fried artichokes, and they're making candied artichokes now, everything.
Well, that was another thing that I wanted to talk about, the sagra. There are tons of sagra whenever anything comes into season, right? If it's chestnuts, if it's artichokes, or whatever comes into season, there's a festival to celebrate it.
I'm very lucky because where I live in a strip of land that's very fertile, and it's saffron and truffles.
Wow, that's pretty nice.
And from medieval times, the saffron was really from San Gimignano in that area, and so once I was gifted saffron bulbs as a hostess gift, it was really lovely. But where we live, we have truffles every season. There's truffles all year round. The precious ones are the white truffles. But there's a summer truffle, there's a spring truffle. And so any time of the year you can go truffle hunting. And like I said, I'm very lucky because my assistant's father is a truffle hunter. Mm-hmm. So when I was just leaving now, as a fundraiser, the swim team throws a truffle party. And it's in a big building, you know, like a community church center. And you go, and it's a truffle dinner, probably about five or six courses for like $30.
Mm.
And it's made by all the locals. So it's, you know, pasta and crostini and truffles with mushrooms and truffles with meat and truffles like this and truffles like that and truffles. It was just, it's so exquisite. And they're like 200 people at a time for these meals.
Amazing.
And it's so much fun to be in a village for a festival, for a celebration. When I organize my culinary tours, I love to do it around a festival. And, you know, I'm not really religious, but seeing these people carrying the statue of the Blessed Virgin Mary, and she's covered in gold chains that they donated to her on their shoulders and up and down hills, and the people just following, it gives you goosebumps. It's just fabulous.
Well, and I'm sure it gives them, you know, a sense of structure, too, that mm-hmm. it gives, you know, for their lives. And very important. And I love the idea that food is all part of it, you know, that mm-hmm. food and the seasons are part of it. There is a particular festival I read about in Florence, and you lived in Florence. You're in Chianti uh-huh. now, but yeah. You lived in Florence for many years. The Festa del Grillo?
Oh, I was going to talk about that.
Oh, are you?
I was going to tell you because it's after Easter. It's the
I had never heard of it before.
Oh, it's in the park of the Cascina Park, and it's the cricket festival. And when I first moved there, I would always go because they would, it's like bringing you good luck in springtime. And they would, little farmers in the countryside would go and catch crickets and bring them in and on mulberry leaves or something. And they would hand make little cages. And then they would, you'd buy your little cage and they'd put a cricket in it. And so in your house, you have this little...
Not for consumption, not a fried cricket.
Well, I was going to say, it wasn't a food festival, so yeah. I didn't know if we'd talk about it. We're not eating crickets.
Well, that's what I went. I had not heard of it, so that's why I wasn't sure.
It's a very Florentine festival.
I don't think the Italians eat fried crickets, but you never know.
Not yet. Yeah, you right. know, if anybody else has anything to do with it, we all will be eating crickets and ants for
that's
protein.
Right. That's right.
They're not bad. I've had them in Spain. I love them.
I've had them actually years and years ago. You know, someone brought them back, and I said, "Tasted them. It was a salty snack. Tasted okay.
Salt chili's good. Yeah.
Of course, in New York, where we're located, we have the San Gennaro Festival,
and that's based out of Naples traditionally.
Yeah, and then so what are the traditional foods? Is there anything special about
you know in San Gennaro in Naples? It's totally religious.
It's not food related.
No. They go to the church, and he's one of those miracle saints. They have a container of his blood. And on that holiday, they bring the container out, and it goes from, if it's going to be a good year, it goes from solid to liquid. And they just brought the Pope to Naples and presented it out of season to the Pope, and it started to melt, and that was a good thing. It means he's a good Pope.
Okay. All
because
right.
the miracle started to happen.
Anything special about any of the other saints' feast days, or like a particular food that comes to mind?
Well, again, I have to tell you, Sicily is like Naples and Sicily are like the best.
The feast
but
places.
Sicily, I think also maybe because it's still so isolated. Because I was a pastry chef, I love the desserts, and I'm always interested in the history of desserts. Most of the fabulous pastries in Sicily were and. Kind of still are made in the cloisters right. by the nuns. I mean, champagne was invented by Dom Perignon. They had nothing to do. They invented fabulous things. Originally, the marzipan fruit was made to decorate the trees in winter for a visiting noble person to the convent. And it was naked, so they created all these little fruits and hung them up on the trees to make it look like a beautiful garden. And still today, all those almond-based, handmade, beautiful little fruits are... were the convent, now they're commercial. Do you know the story about Maria Grammatica, the Bitter Almonds book?
Oh, yeah.
That Maria
Simonetti
right. wrote, the American woman wrote that. Well, she's now teaching classes and has a beautiful space. So we just did a workshop with Maria Grammatica and her class. And she still hand makes a lot of them because she was given to the convent when she was young, she and her sister. And she decided not to become a nun and came out and opened up a pastry shop. So she makes all these beautiful desserts. So she still does them by hand. There's little forms you can buy to go with them. Hand painting everything, but then there's also several regions in Italy have body part desserts.
Yes.
And my favorite ones are the boobs. So Saint Agatha,
Petit Dinon, no, Petit di, the
La Monica,
La Monica, yeah. Right?
The Virgin. So the Catania's patron saint is Saint Agatha, and she was you become a saint because you were tortured or martyred, and she had her boobs pulled off, and they have what is basically a little cassata cake that is glazed in white and with a little cherry nipple, and so those are the Pope di Santa Agatha. And then they have, like, the where I am outside of Memphis and up in a village of Sambuca di Sicilia, they have the Minne della Vergine, little virgin boobs, and it's a pie crust shaped like a boob with little sprinkles on top, and the inside is a milk custard with a...
Thanks for listening to this episode of A Taste of the Past. Hope you'll join us again next week, Thursday at 12 p.m. Eastern Time, as always on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.